This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to this podcast, Season 7, Episode 24. My name is Tim Mitcher. I'm in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jonathan Kuhlein in Jacksontown, New Brunswick.
Hello there, kids.
We also have Hyman Lupus Jr. on the line in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
It's going rather well. Thank you very much. Thank you for asking. So we'll dive into some fact check from last week. It was my turn to be away and shake my fist at the podcast people when they were talking about the DVDs rotting. I don't know if you remember, but we may have talked about this before. I know we talked about this More Than Just Code, but the early CDs had an issue with, the nickel plating that they used in them would deteriorate and it would get holes in it. And I suspect that might be similar to what's going on with the DVDs rotting. But the reason, and of course, you guys mentioned last week that all three of us put a link to this story, different links to the story, but the one that I put in there has a listing. Jonathan mentioned not knowing what he would like to have known what they were, but they've got a link here to a Google Doc in there, which shows the movies that are affected. And your Entourage season 1, 2, 3, and 4, Jonathan.
Good thing I don't have those available to me on, Max or Crave here in Canada.
But they've got Looney Tunes on there. Looney Tunes Gold, I think you might have some of those, right?
I think I do, yeah, actually.
Yeah, let's see. And then there's some James Bond Ultimate Collection. I don't think you have those, though, right?
I have the Blu-ray ones from that, whatever that iteration was.
Oh, all your Stargate SG-1 ones are going to be.
Oh, no. Good thing I don't have
Smallville,
any of those.
Smallville?
No, I don't remember. I think maybe somebody gave me the first season, but I don't think I ever watched it. So
Pinky and the Brain.
Those I do have.
Yeah, there you go. Well, it says seasons. It doesn't say which one specifically.
Well,
let's see what else.
I'll be hitting up the folks over.
Your John Wayne collection is going to be ruined.
What? Not my John Wayne's.
Oh, all of Veronica Mars, Sopranos.
Yeah. Again, this is not nothing.
West Wing.
Oh, hey, now we're talking serious stuff. Hey, yeah, wait a minute.
Those are the boxes. So 2001 Space Odyssey Director Series, Clockwork Orange Director Series. Yeah, it's pretty extensive list here. Because you had mentioned The Matrix, and I scroll down to the M's. Let's do that real quick. Lucky, what's this? Lucky Me, Doris Day.
2001 production. A Space Odyssey. Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, it's on the top of the list. Yeah. But specifically the director's ones, right? I have the first one on Apple anyway. The Matrix.
I think this is all just a big conspiracy to have people have to upgrade all their DVDs sooner.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Like speaking of having to upgrade, as we know, there are at least 47 reasons why people are getting rid of their Teslas these days. And, you know, they're selling them out of moral compass or whatever. But interestingly today, I mean, I was laughed at the Cybertruck because they're all glued together. And I kind of joked about the fact that, what if they got too hot and the glue started peeling off? Turns out every single Cybertruck has been recalled because they used the wrong glue to put them together.
Sure
so, but now listen, here's my conspiracy theory. If you were going to get rid of your Cybertruck because you're not happy with the current political environment and they had a recall on it, could you sell your truck?
I mean, you can, because the recall is the responsibility of the owner. And so, I guess the question is if it's a safety recall. If it's a safety recall, then theoretically you have to have it done before you could resell it.
But, I mean, clearly Tesla doesn't care about safety, as we've had seen demonstrated over the last couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, I don't think that's top priority.
You guys saw the LiDAR test where they put LiDAR on top of a car and had it drive into a Wile E. Coyote-style wall where the road was painted on the wall and the Tesla drove right through it.
That's not ideal.
Doesn't use LiDAR. And the other thing, the funny thing about the Teslas is when they're about to get into an impact, the autopilot turns off just like 1 second before.
Great.
How convenient.
Great stuff.
Anyway, makes it real easy to say autopilot was not activated
wasn't running
during the crash.
I couldn't help but notice tonight, right before we came on, I put on the third period of the Maple Leafs versus New York Rangers game. And I couldn't help but notice that the good folks at Polestar are advertising on the national sports broadcast here in Canada. I wonder why they think now is a good time for them to advertise their electric vehicles.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think you know, the number one fan and I went for a test drive in the Polestar at the Canadian Auto Show. And it's funny because like they had six Cybertrucks.
Mm.
And people were just lining up to drive those things. This was, of course, all before the latest nonsense. But that was the most Cybertrucks I'd seen in any one location, you know. And we went out onto Lakeshore and drove along, you know, and came back, did a loop around the convention center, right? And so there were six, you know, people were like looking at the Cybertrucks as they drove by. Mm. Anyway, enough about the Cybertrucks. Let's move on to the Cybermen. And we'll head over to headlines. Jonathan.
Wait, am I first?
No, Jaime. Let's do Jaime instead.
Okay.
I changed my mind.
Yeah, no worries.
I reserve the right to change my mind.
Speaking of all these wonderful streaming services, the nice people at Max continue to remove stuff from the service. In this case, the classic Looney Tunes lineup. So they're going to prioritize, according to TheVerge.com, that we have here in the show notes for those of you transporting at home. According to The Verge, who is reporting on... reporting from Deadline, the streamer will, quote, prioritize adult and family programming rather than content for kids.
Wait, that's not kid stuff. Interesting. Didn't I see a new Looney Tune cartoon, Daffy Duck and Porky Pig or something?
There is a new movie in the theaters right now.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, Jaime, I'm sure it says that in the article, but it's very unusual timing considering it's actually doing quite well at the box office.
Mm-hmm.
No idea. You save a few tax bucks by doing this. So there you go.
So how are kids supposed to learn about classical music now?
No, not that one. Don't mean not that one.
Oh, yeah. That ding, ding, ding. Yeah. I was thinking about the Barber of Seville.
Yeah, varmint.
Barber of Seville.
Yes, that's right.
The Rabbit of Seville.
Rabbit of Seville. An all-timer.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I have those on DVD. Oh, never mind.
You had them on DVD.
Yeah, thanks, Warner Brothers. It's all a conspiracy. It's all coming off. Can't watch it on Max. Your DVDs are burning up. Something's happening.
Yep. What else you got for us, Jonathan?
I've got some good news and some bad news. Good news is sixth season of Solar Opposites is coming. The bad news is that is the final season of Solar Opposites.
Mm-hmm.
Alien adventures of I don't even have a family name. The family of Solar Slorpians. Opposites.
Slorpians. The Slorpians.
They're Slorpians. Yes, true. I was thinking of their surname. I'm like drawing a blank. I'm like, no, I guess they don't have a surname. They are the Slorpians. Yeah, it's been a good run. I mean, six seasons is not nothing. And, you know, I think I really enjoyed the series. It makes me laugh, but also I feel like it is a little played out. So I don't think this is the worst thing. Hopefully they can finish strong and make it something in an enjoyable finish. Yeah, so I don't know what Mike McMahon's going to do at this time, because I think he was working on this one and
the Lower Decks.
He was working on Lower Decks. And so, yeah, Mike's going to have some time on his hands. This is, I mean, hopefully he'll do something great. I'm sure he will, because he's amazing, but.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it was the same team that was animating the Lower Decks, right? That did the Solar Opposites and
Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, now they'll have something to work on.
There you go.
Cool. Well, but sad to see the Slurpians go I'm worried about the pupa now and the people in the wall.
I mean, in theory, I guess we'll see. Maybe the pupa will finally fulfill its destiny.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We'll throw over to Jaime for some more things.
Yeah, so if you are the kind of person who's like, you know what, it's a little intimidating and mildly inconvenient to choose one episode to watch out of the 35 seasons of The Simpsons, they hear you at Disney Plus, and they said, what if we had a channel within Disney Plus that's literally just a huge marathon? So whenever, any time of the day, you know, 24/7, 365, you can just go in and whatever's there, it's like watching old school TV. Oh, look, Simpsons are on and you watch. So it's one of those pretty easy, like, hey, you just want to watch something without thinking about it too much.
Yeah, I've seen those on some other platforms that do the perpetual streaming services of certain shows. I've never really felt the need to put one on. I appreciate it, though. Like, there is something very... I like the serendipity of watching those, like, old school television sometimes, where you're just like, oh, that episode's on. I'm going to watch it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they do comedy here, does the Big Bang Theory continually. They used to, and they were doing Friends for a while, too, right? And Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of channels where you can watch Seinfeld over and over again.
Yeah.
It's funny because, you know, I watched The Simpsons when they were on the Tracy Ullman show, obviously, because I watched that show all the time. And then I never really got into the show itself. So that'd be kind of an interesting thing to put on. I mean, I have watched episodes, right? And I've watched the House of Horrors, whatever they call it, right? But yeah, I've never really gotten into seasons of this stuff, right? Are there arcs and stuff like that, or do they just continue?
The Simpsons?
Yeah.
I think the most that I can recall them doing is a two-parter. I don't
know. Or maybe like the Who Shot, what's his name?
Well, they've done a few of those kind of things. And there's some thin through lines, you know, there's definitely like arcs for characters that continue and characters that come, like, you know, the Sideshow Bob sort of.
Oh yeah, and there's like Ned Flanders people. And his wife, and
yeah, like there's been stuff, but not really the same way as you know, as what we're
like
talking about.
Like a true
about.
Arc, right?
Yeah. But I know on Tubi they have like an anger management. The TV show has like a stream, and there's a few other shows on the streams there. Like I think there's like a Baywatch stream, and I can't remember what else they have on there. But I know they do like a bunch of streaming channels on there. So again, if you're just like, I just want something to fall asleep to, I'm going to put on the, you know, whatever it is channel. Mm-hmm. Shows that have good cadence so that you enjoy the ride.
Yeah. 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 I've been putting on Doctor Who lately and going through I'm in season two right now of the new generation, the next generation of Doctor Who, the pre-Disney next generation, you know, because Disney's what Doctor Who Voyager, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, cool. All right, and I just had a quick story here. I read this afternoon, which is surprising, but not surprising, but because we've talked about Apple's services in the past on More Than Just Code, but here the story is that Apple TV Plus has been reportedly losing $1 billion per year. And that's an interesting take. I mean, when we consider things like they have the hit show right now that everybody is jumping on the bandwagon about Severance. So probably because tonight's the finale, we should probably stop the recording and go watch the finale. But, yeah, everybody's talking about it. The cast has been making the rounds of, they're starting to make the rounds of TV interviews. You know, Ben Stiller's been on a few things talking about it. Right. So. But that said, it's surprising that Apple did lay off a bunch of people last year in the, I think the news and publishing, what's it say here? Yeah, news and books division last year. Most people, it says here in the article, and I'm not surprised, get Apple TV because they have the iCloud Plus or the iCloud as part of Apple One, right? But apparently like the fitness and Apple Arcade and News Plus are also struggle with low usage and low profits. So,
yeah, and I think it's one of those things where they do have the luxury of being the most valuable company on the planet with huge amounts of cash lying around. But
for the time being, yeah,
they also have the opportunity to, you know, that's where they're making their money. They're bundling this when you buy a new iPhone. They're bundling this when you buy a different Mac device, an Apple device, whatever it is. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So for them, it's almost a lost leader at this point. It's like, you're getting this for free, and then people get it, and hopefully they like it, and hopefully they keep it, and it gives them more market penetration. And if they keep hitting home runs like Severance and Silo and you know, Ted Lasso and stuff like that, eventually people are going to want it, right? So,
right, yeah.
And they've been steadfast. Like, you know, they are the only service that is only releasing original content.
Hmm.
Everybody else, Amazon,
the recycling, yeah,
Max, Crave, all these ones are all bringing in movies and shows that are previously existing. Apple's the only one that does exclusively their own content. Now, I say that, of course, there are smaller streaming services that may do that, but I mean, of the major players in the market. So So they really are kind of doing their own thing too. They're not doing the same thing that everybody else does. And that's going to cost a fortune, right? Like if you're going to make nothing but original content and your standards are high, yeah, of course you're losing $1 billion a year. It's probably, you know, almost miraculous. It's only $1 billion a year.
Yeah. Well, again, we've always, Jaime and I have talked about the truckloads of cash that drive up to Tim Cook's, you know, house, and he's got all those Apple air, what do I call air? What were those air power devices sitting in his garage, right?
the wireless all-in-one charging device.
And he's got a whole room full of HomePods, right? So, yeah. I mean, it's not unusual for Apple to have road apples, as we like to call them, over the years. But it's funny because primarily they're people think of them as a phone company now or a phone provider. But you know, they are a hardware company, and you know, they take it on the chin for the software, but and the way they manage their software and services has been something that we slowly watched it grow over the years. It's always been a small percentage of Apple's income, but still steady, right? I think we started, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but when we first started watching it, we kind of shook our heads and saw the slow rise of it, right? Every time they do a call, like a profit call, the way you call it, earnings call. There's always a large chunk of sustainable income again, recurring income, I guess, is the important part, right? So, but yeah, it's funny that they're losing that much money. But everybody wants to watch Severance. Mm-hmm. What can I say? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how much of the Lopez calculus drives things after tonight's finale.
Well, they got to get that Slow Dogs season out, right? Slow Dogs is another one that's a big seller on Apple and getting some buzz, right?
Oh, slow horses. Yeah.
All right. Well, that brings us to the main part of the show where we talk about something Star Trek related, hopefully. And this time we are going to continue almost at the penultimate pairing of Star Trek season two Prodigy, episode 17 and 18. 17 was The Brink, and 18 was A Touch of Grey. And I think they were kind of related, but each had their own sort of spin on things, right?
Yeah, I mean, this season is much more season three of Enterprise-y. It's much more like each story kind of piggybacks off the previous story. It's funny, I was thinking about that as I was watching these last two episodes, that, you know, there's always a Starter Trek lesson to be learned in this one. And this one is, you can't miss an episode, kids, because otherwise you'll have no clue what the heck's happening.
Right.
Which is much more... It's much more similar to the current Star Trek model. Discovery, I would say, maybe less so Lower Decks and Strange New Worlds, although Strange New Worlds even in of itself has arcs that carry forward. But yeah, this reminded me very much of like, you know, yeah, if you missed one of these episodes, you'd have no clue what was happening. Also speaks to the era we live in now where, you know, I think many of us watching Enterprise back in 2002 were like, this is frustrating. I missed an episode. I can't go back and watch it. I'm annoyed and I'm not going to watch it anymore. Whereas now it's all on a streaming service or it's all, you know, a place where you can watch all the episodes so you don't miss episodes. So it kind of changes the stratagem, I think, for storytelling.
Yeah. And so the synopsis for this episode was what?
Brink was the one where they have to go down to try and complete the rescue mission. Yes, the idea is they have to go down and save Dad and save Wesley. This again, another one that sort of the mission sort of culminates in a cliffhanger too, right? Because it's like, oh no, they have to split up.
Yeah, doesn't it merges in with the next episode where they release the Kraken, as it were, right?
Yep. So, yeah, it's funny because, you know, last week, Jaime, you and I talked about Ascension Part 1 and 2. If you can tell me the difference between that as a 1 and 2 parter and this is two separate episodes, I'm curious. Do you have any thoughts on why that is a 2 parter and this isn't?
I have no idea. And I guess looking ahead, the final two episodes, 19 and 20, are Ouroboros Part 1 and Part 2. So I have no idea why they didn't make Brink and Touch of Grey 1. You know, two-part sequence, because it ends in the first one and Brink with like you know, Wesley Crusher warning them that there's some danger, and he like passes out, and then it immediately goes into, okay, the doctor is treating Wes's injuries. It's like, you know, you just put a commercial break in there. It's the same episode.
Well, and they, yeah, and they cut back to like what happens like the 2 minutes before he gets there, and then cuts to exactly the same sequence from a different perspective. It's like, okay, so these aren't two-parters, but last week's were two-parters. Okay, sure.
Yeah, it's a bit weird that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, so in the second one, they're still on the planet trying to get away, right? And they're kind of stuck in this. But I think the brink is about the brink of war with Solom, right?
Or yeah. So how do you say the name? Yeah, it's basically the brink of Solom. Yeah.
Yeah, with what's her name? Essentia is still she wasn't in the battle that they won last week, but because she was doing everything by remote control. But they've captured one of the I don't know what to call these things other than the Matrix,
loom, the loom,
Matrix
loom.
Monsters, yeah,
the yeah.
loom. The loom worm. What were those called in Matrix? Agents or something like that? No, they weren't called that. They were called something else.
Squeakies.
But anyway, squeakies. Yeah, they looked very similar kind of thing. And here they have to try and battle one, I guess, or dupe it somehow, right? Escape the planet and get back to Voyager.
A weakened one that was had like a collar on it to keep it as a dangerous pet / arena gladiatorial.
Rancor.
Yeah, like a rancor. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. So are you guys looking forward to the next two episodes? Is this sort of, we know it's the finale of the series, but but do you think it's going to be a finale-ish conclusion? Well, like,
Jaime, you've already seen the full series, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm rewatching, you know, the two episodes each week to refresh myself. I think it ends on a pretty satisfying note. It doesn't end on any, you know, crazy cliffhanger or anything like that. So you'll feel fine about this sort of stuff, with the kind of thing that leaves you open to something happening in the future, but doesn't have to.
Yeah, season one ended with them finding the Federation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this one started with them becoming some like advanced cadets with, you know, getting credit for their college years, you know?
Right.
Like the whale lady in Star Trek 4.
That's right. Congratulations. You're the only person who knows anything about whales anymore. You get a commission.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this wrapping up on a couple of fronts. One, I'm looking forward to seeing how it ends. The other is I'm kind of ready for it to end.
Okay.
It's good. It's not great. And it's nice that we've had something Star Trek to talk about, but also it's not my favorite Star Trek. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go out here on a limb and say it might be my least favorite Star Trek.
You're not going to miss Jankum and Rocktaw and...
You know what? Anything that Jason Mantzoukas wants to do, I'm in for. so there's that. But, I mean, you know, it was the moments this week, and I get why they're there. It's not for me, but like... You know, the weird look on the commander's face when he has to look after the little, you know, squibble or whatever the hell they call that little rock talk hybrid mutant thing. I'm like, okay, here we go. Like, it's just a little bit saccharine. It's a little bit, you know, it's childish. And, you know, again, it's not for me. That's fine. But I also, that is why I'm looking forward to not having to watch it anymore. I think this was an interesting exercise. I was thinking about this earlier because I was like, wow, we're down to the last two episodes. And I was like, should we put it to our fans to suggest what we should rewatch next? Because we can open up the doors. Stay tuned.
35 kids. Seasons of Simpsons.
You're going to want to stick around for the watch list, because I took one on the chin for both for both of you and all our fans with my watched this week. So stay tuned. I am willing to watch a lot of things for our fans.
Wow. Thanks for doing that.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to Severance, and we're talking about The After Hours, which is season 2, episode 9, the penultimate episode. This was an interesting one. I again, because of the gap in time between when we watched it and this, I was struggling this morning to try and recap for myself what the show was about, but then I remembered, okay, she's back from Mrs. Cobell is back from Newfoundland.
Yeah,
and
yes.
She's been called by
Devin.
Devin, I think. Yeah. Devin is Mark's sister, yeah, to come and assist in his what do you call it when they're separating?
His reintegration.
Reintegration. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And Mark's like, what the hell did you call her for, kind of thing, right? So, that's the first part. And then, of course, the other part is sort of concluding what Dylan and his wife are doing, right? So,
so everybody gets kind of an arc here, but the whole thing is really just set up. So, yeah, there's the story with Mark and Cobell and Devin. There's the story with Dylan and his Innie's response to what happens with his Audi and his wife. And then there's the thing with Irving and Bert with the train and all that. And then there's this sort of weird, what's going on
promotion?
With
promotion? Miss Wong gets promoted, sort of.
Well, she gets booted by Milchick, right? Basically. But no, it's the Helly Helena stuff, where like Helena is with her dad, and she's suspiciously not eating egg yolks, but only eating egg whites. You know, there's lots of reasons you could do that. You might just not like egg yolks. However, that is also something I recommend for pregnant ladies.
Oh, really?
Yes. And then there's also the, you know, she wants to figure out, because she basically shows up for work. There's no Irving anymore. Mark doesn't show up for work. So it's just her and Dylan. Dylan's going through his own crisis. And so she's left on her own. And so she decides she's going to look for the mystery corridor, the mystery elevator from hell that Irving's been painting, and that he left a message behind that Dylan had found. And then we get, you know, James, the CEO, her dad, showing up on the severed floor, sort of, you know, dun 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 style in this episode too. So everybody gonna get set up for like, where's this going, kind of thing. I think the Dylan one is the most interesting, just because like, by his resignation, he's essentially committing suicide, right? Like the version of himself is saying like, if I can't be with this woman, I don't want to exist, which is pretty intense.
So the Innie is resigning, not the Audi.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He checked it's all funny the boxes that they don't... for like the reasons too, which made Milchick comment that it was, you know, unnecessary.
Yeah, it's funny that like they let your Innie resign. Like, shouldn't your Audi get a vote too?
Yeah. Well, but the Audi was fired at the end of the the beginning of the season, right?
Because and then rehired again, right? Because Mark wouldn't work without him.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds familiar. Yeah. It's interesting to see where this is going to go. But they have to wrap up a lot of stories, right? So
yeah, and that's ultimately I think what made this episode a bit of a miss was like it's just glue. Mm-hmm. This is the Avengers Age of Ultron of the Severance universe, but without any action scenes. It was really just connectivity. Which,
yeah, it's like loading the bases without knowing what the batting order is going
to
be, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, it's important to advance these stories. It's important to heighten the tension. It's important to build the stakes. But ultimately, as a standalone episode, it was probably the worst episode of Severance they've ever made, just because of its nature. There's nothing to do about it. It just is what it is. They kind of illustrated that this might be, you know, Bert puts Irving on a train. Bert basically says, like, my job for Lumen before was like not quite hitman, but maybe like hitman's assistant. He shows up and is basically like waiting in Irving's living room and basically says, like, you know, I was supposed to drive you out to the woods to meet someone who's going to, you know, put a bullet in your head. And instead he puts him on the train. There's an implication that that might be the end of Irving's storyline, although I don't think that that is the case, because that would be a very disappointing end for this character that we've come to really like. But
yeah. Well, doesn't he tell him not to come back or something?
He
does.
He puts him on the train. Yeah. He says, don't tell me where you're going. Don't tell me where you get off. And I never want to see you again. And that's how they leave things. I just have a tough time imagining that Irving's going to do that.
Yeah. Or that we're going to lose John Turturro, you mean, as a character.
Well, that right? Also, I mean, this has been built as an ensemble, and it seems really weird that that would be the conclusion of this arc. It seems extremely unsatisfying. So I don't know if we see him in this finale, because it may not be necessary to bring him back when you've got these other larger stakes things. You know, we want to know what's going on with Cold Harbor. We want to know what's going on with Mark and Miss Cobell and Gemma. And we want to know what's going on with Helly and Helena and her dad. Like, those are much more interesting arcs than than where we are with Burton Irving right now, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to get the answers to those in this episode coming up, but we'll probably get like a real sort of shocker happening, right?
I mean, tonight on social media, they have been like, you know, hammering it. Like, all of the stars have been posting like only 1 hour to go, only 20 minutes to go. Like they're really hyping this thing up. So
yeah. Like I said, it's been the buzz on the news. They had like, they were talking about it on CBC today. They've had them doing the late night circuit, right?
Oh, so, yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, this is, imagine it'll be an opportunity for Apple. You know, obviously you had the story mm-hmm. there talking about how much money they've lost and everything else. I imagine we'll hear from Apple, if not tomorrow, then by next week we'll hear, oh, X quadrillion people watched the Severance finale and it's the biggest thing to ever hit Apple TV. And oh my God, if you haven't watched it, you're just missing out. And they'll use this to hype the whole platform and the show.
But you know, timing is everything. And unfortunately for Apple, there's a big story that came out today. Well, not so much. I mean, we've been waiting for Apple Intelligence to sort of come out of the gate, right? And they kind of pulled it back a little bit, and now there's lawsuits about people suing Apple because they bought into the technology thinking Apple Intelligence was coming along, and now there's a delay. And so Severance is the only good thing that's going for Apple right now, right?
There you go. There you go. Yeah. They'll need to distract us. Look over here. Look at Severance.
Yeah.
Well, they do have the show Jaime you were talking about last week. The studio starts next week, so you know maybe they're hoping that they could just distract people with shiny things while they don't have to think about their stock prices mm-hmm. and their lawsuits.
Yeah, true. I mean, it's bad enough the entire tech community is taking a hit on stock prices these days, right?
Yeah. Jaime, what were your takeaways from this one? This was like I say, a bit of a glue one.
Yeah, I think. I think one thing that sort of came to mind was all of the different, you know, you're talking about arcs, but it also asks questions about like, how would society deal with some of this stuff? So we've certainly seen from the beginning of the show that the innies are not generally viewed as people, although we did learn that from Bert and his partner, that his husband, that, you know, the church that they go to considers the innie to have like its own soul and offers redemptive path. But society at large seems to treat the innies as not really real people. And Ms. Wong certainly seems to ascribe to that philosophy. So it's not surprising that you as an outie can quit and it's like, oh, okay, well, I guess the innie just doesn't exist anymore. Kind of like they're dead, right? But seeing the inverse of that, of like, you know, you come out of the elevator and they're like, hey, turn in your badge. What? Yeah, you're innie quits. So you no longer have a job. We'd be like, what happened in there? What's going on? Like, that's a really weird one to think about. And the other one related to Dylan is, you know, his wife doesn't get a chance to say it, but it's quite clear that she intended to say it didn't really feel like cheating because it was you, right? It's like his body, and it's even like a lighter version of him that isn't, you know, bogged down by, you know, bills and work and marital strife. She says he's like, he reminds me of what you used to be like, you know, sort of the man I fell in love with. And it's one of those ones where you can totally see why somebody would be like, hey, it pretty much looks, talks, and sounds like my spouse. This isn't really cheating, right? And yet, it's arguably a different person. And that's one of the sort of through lines of this series. And if you look at it a different way, I'm like, well, let me ask you a question. If your spouse was, you know, exceptionally high or drunk or on some sort of medication where you can't drive, you know, or operate heavy machinery, and then you like go sleep with them again, they are your spouse. Have you violated them? I'm like, yeah, you have, because they did not consent to this.
You're in an altered state for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a very complicated thing that they do here in this episode on some of these arcs.
Never short of ethical quandaries on this show, are they?
Never, ever. And it is kind of fun. The other thing that was happening in the glue was, you know, we talked about Ms. Wong, her Wintertide Fellowship is done. And so she's being kind of whisked away, you know, graduating, so to speak, but also getting out of Milchick's hair. And then Milchick just standing up to the other guy and instead of getting bullied into saying sorry, it's like devour feculence.
Oh, such a great line.
Apologize for the word. And he's quite right too. He's like, hey, my entire jurisdiction is the severed floor. What happens there, that's on me. Everything else, that's on you, bro. So get off my back.
Yeah, I must say, I've enjoyed... It's one of the things we haven't talked about as much as we probably should have, but that part, and his name, Travis Tremel? I can't remember his name. The actor who plays...
Tillman.
Yes, there you go.
Tremel Tillman.
Is fantastic. He's been so good. You know, he did get this sort of elevated position on this season. He went from sort of, you know, assistant manager to the manager, and his arc's been really interesting, wrestling with the, you know, the sort of weird racist stuff coming from the board, dealing with this weird pressure, Miss Wong trying to undermine him, even though she's basically an intern, you know, trying to manage these people the best he can, even though, you know, he's basically inheriting this very messed up situation. But he's been like a really interesting character, and like very, very well performed by that actor.
Yeah, and he's you love to hate him, right?
Well, and I guess that's the challenge so far is like, do you feel sorry for him? Do you feel sorry for Harmony Cobell, given what she's gone through? Like, are these redeemable characters, or are these, you know, people who are in on the awfulness that is clearly going on at Lumen? You know, it really does paint a lot of gray into what should be a little more black and white.
Right. No, it's a good show. Really enjoy it. Hope they don't wreck it.
Yeah. Tune in next week to Spotcast, and we'll tell you if they did.
Now, a word from our sponsor. Now, back to the show.
And then let's move on to the Daredevil Born Again, episode 4 of season 1.
Mm-hmm.
Six Semper Systema. Yeah. Does anybody look that up?
Death to the System.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I didn't even have to look that up. I actually pulled that Latin out of my head. So there you go.
Oh, there you go. I used the Googles, and the AI overview gives me something very similar.
Well, Sic Semper Tyrannis is what was yelled when Lincoln was assassinated, right? Which was down with tyrants. And so the stemma is a pretty easy extrapolation. But also not one of my favorite episodes of a show. I didn't... This also felt like connective tissue. There was no Daredevil, which, I mean, I get it. I get what we're doing here. We're not going to really see Matt break out probably till the end of this first season. Fine. Okay. If that's what we're doing. Sure. We're going to focus more on like his conflict and the, you know, dynamics and relationships and, you know, ethical quandaries and spirituality and okay, fine. But outside of the scene with him and Frank Castle coming back, which was a nice little moment, this was pretty flat. This was not a great episode of television. It was, it was really just about kind of continuing to build up. So, you know, we meet Hector Ayala's niece, who, okay, well, we're talking, Jaime, you and I were talking last week about, like, well, maybe someone else will take up the mantle. Oh, I wonder who it would be now.
I was going to say, like, is that who takes it up in the comics?
Yes. So, you know, and, you know, the Fisk-Vanessa marriage counseling, running a criminal empire while being mayor, the mayor stuff isn't really landing for me. I don't find it very interesting. The Tony Soprano's kid stuff I don't really care about.
And the other thing too is that it took me a minute to sort of put two and two together that the psychiatrist is the same person that's in a relationship with Matt, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So there's that tension that's gonna come up.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, really, everything in this episode could have just been like the beginning of the next episode, and it would have been fine. If you had just shown the Punisher scene where Matt is trying to sort of, you know, reconcile his dual natures and having that conflict with Punisher, who calls him out on it, and then you see him practicing with his billy clubs, then you see Fisk go downstairs and have like my creepy dinner with my prisoner. And then you see the final scene where Muse is there and draining the blood out of a victim. That's like, there's your 5 minute recap. Like, show me that. I promise you, that's all you're going to see in the what happened on last week's episode thing next week. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
so what's this Muse character? He just showed up in this episode, right?
Or well, sort of. We may have seen him without the mask on previously, but we'll you'll see more.
The guy, the guy in the very first one is Bullseye, right?
Yes, that's Bullseye.
Didn't make that connection at the very start because he didn't have the Bullseye tattoo on his forehead.
Well, he's supposed to be the same character that we saw in season 3 of Daredevil on Netflix, right?
And okay.
So same actor, same stuff. So
I just remember Colin Farrell's Bullseye.
And I knew that's who you were thinking of because that's also what I was character. Thinking of too.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is Dex, right? This is the guy that he had a whole arc in the first season. That's why, you know, he says hi to Karen and, you know, so it's kind of more of an Easter egg if you remember, but like, I heard a good podcast this weekend where they were talking about, you know, Daredevil and the pluses and minuses, and the host of the pod had just rewatched all 3 seasons of the previous series before they watched this. And so it was fresher for them, but they were like, yeah, it's fresher for us. But for a lot of people who are coming into this, they may not have watched it at all. Or right. If they did, like, it's been 10 years since the first season of Daredevil was on. Like, that's crazy to think about, but true. And, you know, you're asking people to remember lots of stuff, you know.
But there's also some character development. There's character development in Hawkeye and Echo as well, right?
There is, but then Marvel's also said, like, we don't want... Like, they referenced the stuff that happened in those, you know, Kingpin got shot and he went away, his conflict with Echo, blah, blah, blah. But you don't have to watch those 2 series to watch this.
Well, where did the wife come from? Wasn't she from...
Where's what?
Wasn't the wife from Hawkeye?
No, the wife.
Where he meets the art dealer.
No, she was from the series. She was from the first series. He met her in the first season of Daredevil and carried that arc through.
Oh, okay.
But you know, I loved that Daredevil series on Netflix. That first season is fantastic. The second season is a little uneven, and the third season has some good stuff, but it's also a little problematic. But that first season is fantastic. And you don't have to have watched any of that to get to this. So if you were a Marvel fan who didn't watch any of that stuff, you're probably going to be like a little bit lost at this point. It seems like if you were coming into this cold and you didn't know anything about all this stuff, it would seem like a lot of stuff is happening really fast. You're watching a show called Daredevil that Daredevil's not in, and they're jam-packing it full of subplots and characters that you don't like. What's going on with, like, Foggy, his best friend? Why did Karen leave? Who was Bullseye? Why did he, you know, what were his motivations? Like, what's all this baggage that Kingpin's carrying around with his wife that we don't really know much about? Like, there's a lot of stuff you're asking people to catch up on. And I guess that's where an episode like this kind of has some value, because you're trying to give some context to that. But ultimately, like, it was a snoozer. It just was. More pew pew pew, or at least like give me some intrigue. Like,
say there's only 6 episodes?
This is 9. They're doing 9 this season season. At least let Matt cook. Like, the best part of the series is the fact that like Matt is like charming and sexy and funny, and yeah, he broods, but like he's not Batman. He's supposed to be somebody who is, you know, a bit of a playboy, a bit of a, you know, like he's got away with women, he's got away with, you know, charming people and stuff. Like, just making him a bummer this year too, right? Like, and I get that he lost his best friend, but like, it's not making him the most engaging character. And when you take the Daredevil out of the equation, it's a slog.
True. I mean, I think the other cool part was the sort of figuring out where the bullet went part, right? That was...
Well, and then when he finds it, and then, you know, and they have been, like, we didn't really talk about it.
But I have a question. Does the Punisher put Braille on the bullet?
Well, he doesn't need it. Matt doesn't need that, but it's also, these aren't the Punisher's bullets. This is all copycat stuff, right? And they hinted at that throughout the first couple of episodes. There were Punisher, one of the cops was wearing a Punisher thing. There was Punisher graffiti art on walls and stuff. So clearly there's a sort of vigilante movement.
He's a scapegoat. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is basically being like, well, we're just doing what the Punisher did. So I expect at some point over the course of these 18 episodes between this year and next year, we're going to see some more of Frank. And we know that John Bernthal is working on this standalone Punisher thing, but we're not seeing that till next fall. So this is, you know, I'm glad the character's getting back in the action, but this is kind of a slow burn too. But also, damn, he's good at that character.
Well, I'm still getting used to him because he was the guy on Walking Dead for a whole long time. First two seasons, I think.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep. The more meaty stuff here is maybe the Easter eggs, Latvian Heritage Day. So they're bringing strongly to the forefront the Doctor Doom stage, setting that up.
Well, that's Latveria, right? Not Latvia.
I thought it was. Oh, dang it. Okay. Well, my bad. I wrote it down. Wait, what? So maybe this autocorrected. Was it Latvian Heritage Day or Latvian
Heritage
Day?
No, it was Latvian Heritage Day, but Doom is supposed to be the ruler of Latveria, not Latvia.
Oh, my bad. Okay,
that's okay.
I wasn't sure if that was
that's
it.
An absolutely normal mistake to make. And the gag of of him having to sit through the terrible children's rendition and then the terrible Latvian rendition of "We built this city on rock and roll" was pretty priceless.
Yeah, I think the acting was pretty solid there.
No, that was just fine.
Yeah. You can see him dying inside. Okay, so here's a real one though. So the guy that stole the caramel corn or something. He says straight up to Matt, they're like, "Look, bro," or Matt says to him, "Hey, man, they have you on video. It's the most obvious thing." It's like, "Oh, but could it have been a Skrull?" It's like, okay, I guess that's a legit legal defense you could pull in the MCU.
Okay, right. Yeah, it's kind of interesting that he obviously Matt hasn't seen the video, right?
They tell me in the video that you're there. Yeah. All I see is every curvature of the screen, but not the actual screen itself. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Cool. Are we ready for the watch list?
Hold on to your socks, kids.
All right, go. I got a bunch of things. First of all, I should have done this in the fact check, but I did go on Jonathan's suggestion and see Mickey 17 in IMAX.
Oh, lucky you.
And I sat, close enough to get a really good seat. Yes, it does. It's extremely entertaining as the movie goes. And
did you see the parallel, the Gilliam parallels?
Yeah, it's basically 12 monkeys. There's a lot of all the medical staff are dressed like the 12 monkey doctors and stuff like that. And the parallel between 12 monkeys is the Bruce Willis?
Yeah, it's Bruce Willis and 12 monkeys.
Yeah, the Bruce Willis character is. He's like a disposable guy. He's sent out to sort of collect evidence from the past and in this toxic, outside area. Right. So that's kind of the parallel between this and Mickey 17, but also the way that they look and the mayhem too. Right. So sort of,
it's got a bit of mayhem kind of stuff. Well, it's a little more farcical than maybe Gilliam does, but yeah. I think you're pretty bang on.
Yeah, I would call it that one. Yeah, I mean, Gilliam puts way too much stuff in a scene and expects you to absorb it all, right, sort of thing. But yeah, I do see the parallel. But yeah, and, obviously I remember seeing Parasite at the Toronto Film Festival before anybody else saw it, and it was kind of like everybody in the room was like, "Oh my God, that was amazing." And then, of course, went on to win Best Picture, right? And so it is really good. I wouldn't say this is a best picture, but it is a highly entertaining film for sure. Anyway, that's not my watch list items. I've got a few things in here. These are carried over from last week because I wasn't here. But I stumbled across these guys called the Slow Mo Guys, and they have a sort of series of videos and stuff like that. But the one I kind of caught my attention, I thought it was interesting for us, is the slow motion. Basically video of how a film camera works, like how the film advances and how the shutter rotates around and in such a way that the film is actually in position. There's little sprockets on the side that hold it in place as the film is exposed and then it advances to the next one. Very, very cool video if you want to find out how traditional 16 millimeter, 35 millimeter, 70 millimeter and IMAX film is made, right? Because we're still making films on film, especially with IMAX. So yeah, check that out if you're super interested in that. But the same folks did a just sort of following down their rabbit hole of videos. They did a Dolly Zoom demonstration of how, I've talked about the Dolly Zoom before, where it's basically a zoom lens and you change the zoom as the camera moves towards the subject. And that gives you that when they're going, that's how they do the severance effect in the elevator. And you've seen this effect in a lot of movies. Usually when, you know, the floor drops out from underneath a character, they do this Dolly Zoom kind of thing to kind of like to give, you know, the impression that there's some sort of awareness of what's going on. But and if you, as you watch Mark or Helly or whoever go down the elevator, you sort of see them change state, right? And it's all done with this Dolly Zoom thing. So check that Dolly Zoom out. That one's not in slow motion per se, but he does demonstrate how to make that kind of effect, right? The next one was Electric State. Now I've wanted to see this for a while. I thought there was a series on. I think it was on Netflix, based on this artist, who does these really kind of, dystopian, futuristic, a lot of, you know, robots and things like that in future torn down societies kind of thing. That's his art. And they've taken that look and they've made an entire movie out of it, starring, Chris Pratt and Millie Bobby Brown, which I didn't realize was Chris Pratt. Fun movie. It's on the Netflix and, I think it was okay. I mean, the story probably was a little predictable in a lot of places, but yeah. And of course, why is Giancarlo Esposito the only villain they can hire these days?
Because he's great at it.
I guess. I mean, the funny thing about it is he's, and it's interesting too in terms of where we are today, especially with me with the Vision Pro, because most of society experiences reality, but in a virtual reality kind of mode. In fact, Giancarlo never leaves his house. He's wearing a helmet and he has a robot avatar that goes out and does all the nasty stuff for him. Right. So, it's an interesting story. It's very, very predictable in a lot of ways, but yeah, it's gorgeously shot and animated and the CGI is amazing. And it's all sort of like, you know, dystopian, robot kind of battles and stuff like that. If you watch the trailer, I don't want to give too much of the plot away because it is a fun movie to watch. So I'll just leave it at that. It was really enjoyable. And the last thing I have here is I was talking about, I don't know if I talked about on this show, but there's been a few presentations that Apple's done on creating, telling stories with immersive computer or spatial computing using the Vision Pro. And unfortunately, if you didn't get a chance to go see it either online or in person in California, and they are taking these talks on tours around the world, they don't let us record them, right? They don't. So you can only take screenshots. You can take photos, but they won't release any recordings. However, they were at South by Southwest last week, in 2 weeks ago, I guess, in Texas, and there's an audio recording of the presentation. So if you want to hear what the content was about, you can listen to the audio-only version. And of course, I'm sure anybody that's went to it took tons of screenshots. You can probably put together your own sort of experience of what it was like. So if you're curious at all what Apple talked about in terms of their feel, see, do, you know, feel it, see it, do it kind of thing, as where they sort of how to tell stories and how they're doing the virtual environments and that kind of stuff was not in this particular one, and it's one that's recorded, but they showed us how they did all those sort of moon, like you can sit on the moon and work and do your daily work, or you can sit in beside the lake at Mount Hood and you know, the rain's falling around you and that's your office kind of thing, right? Those are choices you can make, but so if you're curious about what Apple is talking about these days, check out that audio stream there. And I'm going to throw it over to Jaime for his pick.
Yeah, we're starting to make our way through the Best Picture nominations in this household. and we made our way to A Real Pain with Kieran Culkin and Jesse Eisenberg.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one. You know, I guess it's a dramedy. It is very drama heavy, but there's a fair amount of comedy in mm-hmm. it. About two cousins who go on a tour of Poland to cover their Jewish heritage because they're honoring their late grandmother. It's pretty good. It did bring up questions from my significant other. She said, "Do you think that Kieran Culkin really deserved the the Oscar for
playing himself,
supporting actor. And I said, okay, that's an interesting one, because what is the point of that Oscar? Is it this is the best performance, or you have actual skill in acting? So, like, you know, there are actors who are basically always the same person in every movie. And so there is a question there. But I said, well, let me analyze this a little closer. He does feel sort of superficially similar to the Roman Roy character in Succession. But I said, but here's part of the differences that I saw in the portrayal. And so we sort of talked through it and said, okay, yeah, he actually, you know, did deserve the Academy Award. If he gives a very similar performance in the future, I think we came on the side of would not qualify anymore because you haven't shown growth.
Well, he won a whole bunch of Emmys and stuff like that for that role too, right? So
yeah, but I think in this case,
he's known in the industry as being mischievous, and that's why I sort of said he played himself, right? I did see the movie, mm-hmm. by the way, as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah.
Who else was up? I guess it begs the question: who was he up against in terms of who was else on the ballot for that award? Anybody remember?
Not off the top of my head. We probably have it in our notes somewhere.
I'm looking it up as we speak. We are all looking it up as we speak.
Academy Awards 2025.
Best Actor. Here we go. Kieran Culkin won. Yura Borisov for Enora. Edward Norton for A Complete Unknown. Guy Pearce in The Brutalist. And Jeremy Strong for The Apprentice.
This is who he was up against?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is it leading role or no?
This is a supporting role.
Supporting role, yeah. Okay, I did see two of those other movies. Well, yeah, I would say Edward Norton was okay as Pete Seeger, and Guy Pearce was brutal, but he wasn't. I don't think he was outstanding. So, and I didn't see The Apprentice. Don't think I ever will. And I have not seen Enora yet.
It dropped on Amazon here in Canada this week.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, it's on my to-do list.
Yeah, Enora is the dark horse one. There was audible gasps in my household. Now, granted, there's only two of us and the dog. So,
was it Poyo? Did Poyo gasp?
Yeah, exactly. Audible gasps when Enora won Best Picture because it just really came out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. That's the independent film, right?
I believe so.
But I think Mickey Madison is the host of Saturday Night Live next week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and another thing, just to put a cap on A Real Pain. Another thing that I appreciated out of this one is that this is one of those rare deals with the impact of World War II films, but isn't the same stuff. The fact that it takes place in Poland and shows stuff that, like, I, as an American, have not seen covered as heavily as other bits, like Auschwitz and other sort of things that are...
It's the only one left. That's why they filmed it there, right?
And it's interesting to see that extension of... painting in more of the picture, especially when you see, like, quite starkly, not really a spoiler here, that, like, it was insanely close. The concentration camp was like throw a rock close, not literally, but
to the city. Yeah,
it's like you could see it from there. Like, they didn't whisk it away, you know, to be hidden away behind forests. No, it's just there, just looking down the street.
Was it the same outfit that was where they filmed, what was that other one that came out last year, about the commandant and his family, and it was about the family, but they were right next to the concentration camp.
No, apparently they actually filmed this at the concentration camp, and it was one of the few productions they've ever allowed to do that.
This Real Pain one.
The Real Pain was. I saw an interview with Jesse Eisenberg where he was talking about, like, the lengths that they had to go to, and apparently it was so well received in Poland that they have offered the two of them honorary Polish citizenship.
Wow.
So I feel like they definitely got their dues for it.
So, but I guess the question though is, I'm going to go back to the Jaime Lopez, they shouldn't win an award because you were talking about World War II last time. And what else were you talking about?
I maintain they shouldn't get one for playing a real person. That disqualifies the Pete Seeger performance right off the hop.
Yeah, mine were, you know, we've said everything there is to say about certainly the main parts of World War II. This one kind of edges in again. It, like, had an actual new angle, so it's a good counterpoint to my main point of no more stuff about World War II. There's plenty of other wars you can pick from. And also no more American slavery during a very narrow part of that time period, because there's plenty of fodder. There's like 400 some years. Why do you cover like a 10-year period?
Something that happened 80 years ago. Yeah, yeah.
It's like enough is enough. Cover other parts like right at the beginning, before this was a country, or when it became, you know, a country for the first time. Again, not saying that terrible things didn't happen. I'm like, we really don't need more movies about the same thing.
Yeah, the other film I was thinking about was Zone of Interest. I don't know if you guys have seen that one or not.
No, I had that on my to-do list, but it's you got to be in the right headspace for it, because it's, I'm sure, pretty intense.
Yeah, well, it's really weird, because it's basically about the commandant of Auschwitz, actually, yeah, and his wife, and the style of life that they've become accustomed to. And they're having conversations, and very subtly in the background, you can hear people screaming.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, well, it's
the
very
ashes
strange
from the smokestacks, and yeah.
Just, and covering the kid, yeah, and they have to run away from the swimming, and
yeah.
Nice stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so like, just on circle back on Real Pain, it was really interesting to see that part of the city and sort of go through with it. Was kind of like they were on a tour with a bunch of other people, and you know, I think the character kind of lives in the airports, because he's kind of like lost his way, as it were, and at the end he kind of stays in the airport, right, just hangs out, right? And he's a little estranged from his cousin, but yeah, it's interesting sort of role. But I don't know. Like, if I had to think about supporting actors over the years, I wouldn't necessarily put that as a Oscar-winning performance. But when you look at the field he was compared to, I guess, right?
It's an interesting film, because my significant other asked, is he the main character? I said, he's technically not. He's probably the most important character, but the point of view is from Jesse Eisenberg's point of view. Jesse Eisenberg, although the less interesting of the two, is a necessary part, because it is... You know, we see his you know, difficult to deal with cousin from his perspective.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. All right.
Buckle.
Stick a fork in Jonathan's eye, and
he's got a twofer here. It's surprising.
Watch a movie.
So, dear fans, these two are now looking at what I watched, and they're now feeling deep sympathy for me. And I hope you will too, because I did this for you.
He's Jonathan 17 is what he is.
Oh,
yes.
God. So I mentioned to Jaime last week that Kraven the Hunter had dropped on the streaming up here, and then lo and behold, like 7 days later, Venom the Last Dance dropped on here. And God save me, I did a double feature and watched these two movies. So they're bad. They're both pretty damn bad. Venom at least has some mildly redeeming qualities, in that if you've already endured the first two, there's at least some connectivity to, you know, they there's these winks and nods and stuff like that. But it's neither propulsively action enough, nor funny enough, nor well acted enough, nor well CGI'd enough, nor connected to anything that matters enough for you to waste your time with it. It's just, I mean, if you feel like you need closure and you've watched the other two, then sure, you can go ahead and watch it. But as somebody who did it for you, yeah, you don't have to. It's basically like a buddy road trip kind of slapsticky action picture. But it's all just like Tom Hardy talking to himself with a badly CGI'd thing in over the top of it. And the Venom jokes, the whole like Venom eats people's brains, and it's so done to death. This is a franchise that is best left behind. I hope that this is the last we'll see of this particular incarnation of this. And that being said, it was a 4-star bonanza compared to Kraven the Hunter, because that is a steaming pile. It is so terribly, terribly terrible.
Does he get like the blood of a killed lion on his arm and turns into this hunter guy?
They basically write it up as, yes, he basically is like in Africa with his father, who's played by Russell Crowe, and he ends up getting attacked by a lion and almost dies. And then this magical elixir gets sprinkled on him. And all of a sudden, not only is he not dead, but then he suddenly has these magical powers where he can, you know, basically see long distances and run really fast. And he's super strong and agile and whatever.
Was there a radioactive spider or something? Or
if only. Kraven in the comics was a bit of a one-note character when I was a kid. He would show up, he would, you know, get, he played, you know, all these traps and stuff. He was brought in essentially as a character who was like, I'm a big game hunter. This was, you know, 1960s. I'm a big game hunter. I've caught everything and I've killed everything. I heard about this Spider-Man. I'm going to catch and kill and mount Spider-Man.
Okay.
So, you know, okay, a novel premise. And then he kept coming back and it was really lame. And then they did this incredible storyline called Kraven's Last Hunt, where Kraven basically does catch and, for all intents and purposes, kills Spider-Man. And, you know, he basically does it to prove that he can do it. And then when he's done, spoilers, he shoots himself to death. And it's incredible and brilliant and, like, so in fitting with how that kind of character would view things. This is just a terrible action movie that has, like, no heart to it. Terrible dialogue. The worst ADR I've ever seen in a movie produced by, like, Sony. Like, it is horrible. The special effects are horrible. The acting is horrible. The plot is horrible. It is an absolutely horrible movie. I saw, you know, before I saw the movie, I had seen the comments that were from the head of Sony Pictures, who was like, I think the critics ruined this movie. It's a perfectly good movie and the critics ruined it, so people didn't come out to it. No, this movie's genuinely awful. I think its grand total at the box office is like $25 million. It made globally. Like, it is deserving of everything. I think it's 15% right now on Rotten Tomatoes, and that seems high.
Wow.
The part that bugs me about this is I really like Aaron Taylor Johnson. I've seen him in parts and I've thought, I like this guy. I liked him in Kick-Ass. I liked him in Bullet Train. I've liked him in lots of parts that I've seen him in. And I think he should or could be a leading man. This is not it. Like, fire your agents. Do things better. It's just so bad. And Russell Crowe, man, if this wasn't a paycheck movie for him, he was the worst. He's playing this, like, patriarch of this Russian mob family. And, you know, he's just so terrible in it. Like, I don't know if he got nominated for a Golden Raspberry, but boy, he should have. He was bad. But they're speaking Russian for part of the movie back and forth, but not one of them's actually speaking Russian. And the ADR is off on all of it, which makes it seem like you're watching like a 1960s or 70s Kung Fu movie from Hong Kong. Like, it's, it's so bad, folks. I cannot describe to you. Above all, why did they bother? Like, I get that in order to keep the rights to the Spider-Man movies, they have to continually pump out these big, what's the line? Feculence, big piles of feculence. Like, I don't understand. Like, this had to have lost them money. And I get that there's probably tax write-offs and whatever else. And I get that it's about protecting the asset. But, oh my God, what a waste of a potentially great story. If they had brought Kraven in to tell this kind of Kraven's Last Hunt story in a Spider-Man movie, people would be like nominating it for a frickin' Oscar. Like, the pathos of this character who's like culmination of his life as a hunter is to hunt this almost undefeatable foe and then wins and then, like, you know, dispatches himself is incredible. This was dreadful. It is just yet another example of Sony wasting good characters, totally devaluing these properties and names, and making us, especially as comic fans, just feel awful. So, Sony, I salute you with one of my fingers, and I suggest you please stop making all these terrible movies.
Yeah, I don't know if they can.
Please don't watch these, guys. Please don't watch these movies.
Yes, yeah, I think so. So we shouldn't watch them, right?
Oh, God. My eyeballs, they bleed.
All right. Okay. Well, I guess that's it for another week. So, hey, Jonathan, if people want to get in touch with you and suggest more crazy movies for you to watch,
yeah, how would they do that? I'm genuinely, I welcome this. I do this for you. I love you, my fans. I love you, fans of Spotcast. I want to do this for you. I look forward to what you suggest, but damn, please do better than this. In the meantime, if you want to find me, I'd suggest Blue Sky or Instagram. I'm at JPK News, or you can get me on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
Right. And Hami, if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
I'm on Instagram as @DevWithAHair.
All right. Well, my name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra, on the Blue Sky, on the Mastodon. Yeah, Pixel Fed, you name it. I'm there. All right. And before we go, so last time I was on, I talked about Pel, P-E-L for Pixel Fed, which is the app that my friend was making. And it's our friend Josh Rock, who appeared as a guest host on this show not too many weeks ago. So, but anyway, until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. If you have feedback or questions, you can get in touch with us on the website. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
Oh man.
You still on about that?
Oh man. I knew what I was getting myself into, but I genuinely thought, well, at least it'll be good for the pod. But there was a point during Craven where I was really questioning my own sanity and volunteering for this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Woof.
I saw the Craven was on one of the services.
Yeah,
the other day,
Crave. Thought, Crave. Crave has both of them, which speaks to Crave, yeah. But yeah. Woof. Woof. Not too good, no.
Well, speaking of which, I was chatting with some friends of mine. We were chatting about Tammy and a few other people on her Discord channel. We were talking about, you know, various sci-fi shows, things like that. And Yellow Jackets came up, and I kind of, you know, my 2 cents in about having given up after the 4th episode. And one of them said, "Have you seen the latest episode?" Which is the one that just aired last Friday. And I said, "No." Because, I mean, as I'm watching these people, it's basically about a bunch of girls on a soccer team that crash in the Canadian Rockies, right? And you know, they end up, you know, doing the cannibalism thing, you know, because they don't realize you can walk 20 feet and find a Tim Hortons, right? But anyway, so... And then it's sort of their future, their current lives and what it was like when they were younger. They're all, I don't know what year it's supposed to, the crash is supposed to happen, but they're all in their, you know, they all have kids. They're all in their 30s and 40s kind of thing, right? Currently, right? But there's all this sort of weird mysticism stuff, which was kind of interesting at first, but it got really tiring, right? And then, so this friend of mine said, you should go back and watch it. So I said, okay, fine. So I took one for the team and I went back and watched the last 2 episodes of the 5th and 6th episode of the season. And the last line in the 6th episode is WTF.
Hmm.
And I'm telling you, I was thinking WTF at the same time. So I'm going to watch tomorrow's show when it comes out and report back maybe next week and as whether or not Yellow Jackets has redeemed itself or it's just going to be the same boring crap over and over again. But yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to get a t-shirt and everything. It was so good.
Yeah. So that one's sort of slides over to the horror side a little, right? Like it's almost a horror show.
Well, it doesn't really get into it. It's like Lord of the Flies. It's Lord of the Flies, and then what happened to the flies after they got off the island, kind of deal, right? Mm. So, yeah.
I mean, the cast is amazing. Like, I love Melanie Lynskey. I love Christina Ricci. I love Like there's so many good people in it, and I've heard that the young stars, the younger versions of them, are quite good too.
Yeah, the one that does the voice of Gwen is one of the characters too.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it's the lady from I can't remember her name, but from the Charlie Sheen show, the three men or whatever it is.
Melanie Lynskey, yeah.
Melanie Lynskey, yeah, and she's really good. And Christina Ricci, you love to hate her in this.
Oh yeah,
mind you, they added Frodo, and he's kind of annoying, but you know, yeah, he's a love interest for Christina Ricci's character.
I love that our shorthand is Frodo, and we're all like, yep. Got it.
Know exactly who that is.
Yeah. Actually, one of the most interesting movies I saw with him was with Kieran Culkin, or not Kieran Culkin, Macaulay Culkin, and
The Good Son.
I think it was like the Good Son. Yeah,
I saw it in the theater. I took a date to see that when I was in college.
Did you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. I remember watching it, being like, "This is some messed up stuff."
Yeah. And they're just, it's like a kid's movie. You're thinking it's a kid's movie, but no, it's not.
Yeah. That's, and then it turns into like Sophie's Choice. And it's like, oh, this is dark.
Yeah. And White Lotus continues to be White Lotus.
Yeah. This, that, guest spot on Sundays was quite the thing.
Sam
Rockwell.
And it's
5 minute uninterrupted dialogue, but Walt Goggins like stares at him.
Yeah. That was good.
That was a hell of a monologue. He doesn't win like best guest appearance on a show next year. That'll be disappointing. But
yeah, was it just a one-off?
He might come back, because he said in the episode, Goggins' character, Rick, says, help, "I need you for something tomorrow. You know, make yourself available." Right?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yep. I was a little bit like, it was, that scene was like intense, but like it was an interesting monologue about desire and the nature of desire and human nature and stuff like that. So okay, cool. It was the two brothers who were high on Molly and started making out. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, there's a line for me. I'm not, that's like, okay.
Yeah, that was dumb. But don't you think that the young son is gay?
It may well be, or it could be a combination of that, or he's like, this is all about like power tripping his brother, who's always had this sort of upper hand on him, or whatever. Either way, it was the casual incest on HBO is probably something that needs to be spoken about at some point. There really is kind of a theme going there. I read a piece on Monday where they were basically saying, strangely, this doesn't even crack the top 10 of incest on HBO shows. The first episode of Game of Thrones is a set of brother and sister who are like going to town.
Yeah. No, I didn't find that scene too weird, but I knew that was going to happen.
I mean, I suspected there would be some kind of, because I mean, there was that allusion a couple of times about like him sort of, at one point he sees his brother kind of half naked and is sort of eyeing him up, and you're like, okay, so what's that about? But almost in that way, I'm almost disappointed, because it just felt like it was so obvious. Like, usually mm-hmm. White Lotus is a little bit sort of more subversive. That just felt a little on the nose, but I mean, who knows? Who knows where it's going? There's still three more episodes.
Yeah, and I thought the little English girl was going to have some splaining to do when she gets home, but she kept it clean, I think, right?
Oh, yeah, although the night's not over for that storyline.
Oh, that's true.
It's hard to say. Are they going to come back on episode 6 on Sunday with the next morning, or are they still continuing that night? Because some stuff was still going on overnight. It seemed like a few people had sort of paired off configurations.
And the famous star and her two girlfriends.
Yeah.
Well, kind of took a turn, but that was maybe, I don't know if it, I didn't see that. I mean, I kind of saw that coming, but I didn't see it coming, but.
Well, but then she's a narcissist, right? They've clearly portrayed her as a narcissist, and that's what narcissists do. The one that was really, was again, completely telegraphed was the Belinda storyline, right? She's the masseuse from season one who, she's like, I don't know about consent here, but like, I consent.
Was she in the first series?
Yeah, she was in the first series. She was the one who Jennifer Coolidge's character is like getting massages. She's getting massages from all the time in Hawaii. And then she's like, oh, you should open your own business and I'll finance it. And then she gets distracted
and leaves
her high and dry.
Oh, she's the lady that gets killed.
Yes, she's the one that dies in season two. You see, we're spoiling all the place. Jaime, I hope you're up to date with the show.
Is it the same guy? The bald guy?
So she's right when she says, like, I think this guy might be out to get me. She's right. He is.
Oh,
so
but was he in the first series?
He's been in all three. He's the only character who's been in all three.
Oh, geez, I don't know. It's so far between them that I lose track.
I know. The only reason that he stands out to me is because he was in one of my favorite movies when I was a kid. He was the reclusive guy who lives in the basement in Real Genius.
Oh, okay.
Back when he was like in his 20s.
That's the Val Kilmer movie?
Yeah. Okay. Always a personal favorite.
Haven't seen that one in a while.
Yeah. Well, next time you do, he's the weird guy who lives in the basement.
Yeah, I've been watching from that period. I was watching a couple of minutes of the Back to the Future series because I think episode 2 was on the rotation last weekend. I forgot what it was. Oh, it's supposed to put Simpsons in the background, I guess, right?
That's right. Now nothing but Simpsons.
Okay. All right. Well, I've got plenty of time to do that, right? How many hours is that if you, I mean, it's 24/7, right? But how many hours is it if you sit down and start watching 30 years of Simpsons? How many episodes do you do per season?
It's varied, but I mean, you're talking like 35 years times, so three episodes an hour-ish.
I think the article said 767 episodes.
Yeah.
It's amazing that voices haven't aged in that time, right?
Well, some people have quit, but... So how many was it? How many? 700 and...
Let me open up the episode. 35 years.
And they're like 30 minutes each?
Well, 767 episodes.
767 times, we'll say 22 minutes apiece.
Harry the three.
No, I pressed the wrong button. So that's 16,878 minutes. So we'll divide that by 24. 703 days. So that's 2 years.
Wow.
And so you could have it on for 2 straight years and not see the same episode. That's bonkers.
Yeah. And because people will call it the caveat, it's seasons 1 through 35. So the currently airing one is not part of this, but you know, they just toss another log on the fire.
I'm not watching it, Dan. Forget it.
Yeah, but honestly, by the time you would get to that point, if you started at season one, they would have the next one up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Bart would have children by then.
Yeah. Yeah, that is something.
It's a long time to be a kid.
Or Nancy Cartwright, as the case may be.
Yeah. I saw something the other day. I think, I don't know if it was from the original series or not, but I was telling Carol about it, and... it was Calvin as an adult, and he's married to Susie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen people do those kind of homage-y things. Yeah, yeah.
And having trouble with his kid.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fun.
Oh, by the way, when the dog started barking, I was in the kitchen, and I was editing, and I didn't have headphones on because it was just me and the dogs. And the dog started barking, and my two dogs started running around the house looking for the other dog, barking at the top of their voice. So I had to edit. I didn't want fans to have to listen to that, right, and set their dogs off. So I cut that whole part of the show. But it was hilarious. Like, just they heard Mel or Cintra or whoever it was and just set them both off.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been nice, I'll be honest, to be out here in the countryside, because generally, especially once I get past, you know, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, there's no one, like no one, no deliveries, no other people, whatever. It's just me and them, and Faye. Faye generally does her own thing. And so generally they're pretty good. Every once in a while they hear something and they'll go off. But, I really do love that part of this existence is that they don't bark nearly as much. Now, that being said, I had them out the other night, and it's spring officially now, as of today, and the animals are coming out up here. So the coyotes were running in the woods the other day, and they were howling up a storm, and these two clowns were just like,
what is that noise?
Well, they know coyotes. Ooh. They know coyotes from home, and they get worked up about them there too. So they know what they are, but here they're like close. So they were getting a little bit worked up about it.
Yeah. It's like fields beside you, right?
So there's fields and forests. So you don't have to go very far back on this property to get to the woods. We actually went for a very, very long walk earlier today to get down to the woods. There's
yeah, it'd be nice to walk them without leashes too, right?
Oh, I never. I mean, I haven't put a leash on them outside of when I take them to town. I haven't put a leash on them at all in anywhere in this area. Even like let them out the front door. I don't worry about it. Yeah, that's been really nice. They know, I live in this house that's like set back from the road. The road is crazy because the speed limit's like 80 and people do like 100 down that road. But the dogs have been pretty good about staying well away from it. They know now that I'm fine with them going out behind the barns and stuff. I don't care if I can't see them. I care if I can't see them and I know they went that other direction towards the road. So, but.
Well, don't worry. Sorsha's basically barking at everybody that walks across the sidewalk outside. So she's picked that up from, I don't know if it's a natural thing or not, but you know,
well, Mac does it. Sin does it. Smell. No.
She's a howler though. But Mac howls. Sorsha starts barking, and Mac just starts barking because Sorsha's barking.
That's what Mel does for Sin. Sin goes off, and then Mel's like, "Me too." I'm like, "Okay, you don't. Neither of you need to do this."
Yeah, but if I'm in the kitchen and I get up my chair too quickly, that sets them off, you know, like.
Yeah. But they're already starting to recognize certain sounds too. Like when Pat's car pulls in, they know it's Pat's car. They can hear the sound that it makes and they don't bark like, you know, who the hell are you? They bark like, oh my God, Aunt Pat's here. So, you know, it does completely depend, right?
Yeah. Because, well, I mean, Mac used to be able to recognize Carol's car coming in too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're, you know. They do have that, right? Ability to...
It's that spidey sense.
To tell those things apart, but yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
All right. Should we all break up and go watch Severance? What do you think?
Yeah, let's do that.
Alrighty.
Because it's midnight here already.
I was going to say, as a... for next week, unfortunately, I'll be out for a work event.
Ooh.
So I'll miss Thursday. But I'll be back the next week after that.
Maybe you can post your thoughts in Slack about what you think about Severance.
Yeah, that'll probably have to be the way to go.
Yeah.
And Jaime says he really enjoyed Kraven the Hunter.
That's right. He decided not to watch Severance finale and instead watched a marathon of all the Venom movies.
Everybody should watch it.
Madam Web and Kraven the Hunter.
Yep.
Yeah.
Madam Web. Oh yes, I forgot about that.
Oh, don't you can't. Come on. You gotta watch them all.
It's canon, right? You gotta watch them all. Gotta collect them all. All right. On that note, I'll say goodbye.
All right,
you guys. Goodbye.
Take care, guys.
See you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.